Welcome to Disarming Persuasion, the podcast for sales and business leadership professionals. My name is Dave Rosenberg, and I am the founder and principal at Locked On Leadership, a consulting firm with a mission to replace Thank God It's Friday with Thank God It's Monday. With me is my co-host, a man who can literally teach sales with one hand tied behind his back, Darren Cecil. Darren, what are we going to discuss today?
Well, I need your help, Dave, and I don't suppose you can help me, can you?
Wow. You know, I am honored that you asked. Wow. Thank you, Darren. I'm floored. Why don't we talk about that? Let's talk about asking for help.
All right, let's do that. Where should we start?
Well, how does asking for somebody's help assist you? I had to figure out how not to say help twice. I didn't want to say, how does asking for somebody's help help you? How does it assist you in the sales process?
Well, if I look at in selling, you're probably interacting with a complete stranger. And if you're interacting with a complete stranger, it's beneficial to try to develop rapport, which we've talked about before.
So you're saying our initial objective is to take a complete stranger and make them not a complete stranger.
Absolutely. And I know we've talked a little bit about this before, but let me put this out there. If you want to be valuable, be vulnerable. And that's why asking for help is so powerful.
So let me sit on this. If you want to be valuable, be vulnerable. So expose yourself, expose your weaknesses to somebody. And so ask for help. Does asking for help really make us vulnerable?
It makes us genuine. And a lot of times our perspective and perception as salespeople are people that really don't care about me. They care about the Bucko steak knives, or they care about whatever gift they can get at the end of the month, or they care about filling their own pockets. And they're not looking at to solve my challenges. So if I come at them and say, I really need your help and I don't suppose you can help me, and you probably can't. And it's typically about something going on in my personal life, which I actually need the help in, and people love to help people.
So you're suggesting that I bear my soul with some deep personal issue to a complete stranger.
That's actually laughable, Dave. If you want to bare your soul to a stranger, yeah, please let me know how that works for you. I'm thinking something, for example, now I have children and you don't, and children are a gold mine because as parents, we probably think we're really good parents. In reality, we're hoping to be one step ahead of our children. And so therefore, I can ask for a suggestion about one of my children. I could tell you a funny example that I used later on in life is I was talking to an attorney and I said, hey, your daughter, you have teenage daughters and my daughter is about to be a teenager. I hear either I have to go away to boarding school or she has to go away to boarding school. Somebody's got to go because it's going to be ridiculous around my home. What's one suggestion you can give me? He said, well, I don't have that, but can I tell you about my first date? And I was like, sure. And he said, I knocked on the door. And this man answered the door. The dad answered the door and punched me in the face. And he said, what did you do to deserve this? And he said, nothing. He said, you're right. Imagine what will happen if you do something with my daughter. What time will you have her home? He's like, 9:30. He said, 10 will be fine. I tell that story because I was able to use that when my daughter brought boys home to my home. And it was a great introduction to let him know. And then I followed up with this. I've been to prison. And I don't mind going back, which is true, because I did, I gave talks in prison. So it's a great way. That was one of the best things I ever learned as far as asking for help that's helped me in my personal life. And I can tell you a lot more about business life as well.
So you asked somebody for help about something and they went off in a completely different direction on their answer?
Yes. Yes. And what happened, we developed a bond over that.
Interesting. So what are the sort of things that people should ask for help about?
Well, I mentioned before our kids. My son has received professional pitching lessons from former Major League Baseball players or minor league baseball players. Restaurants are a great suggestion. Hey, Dave, I'm going to be in your area for a meeting next week. I don't suppose you can recommend a good place for dinner, in which case you would say, well, yes, I can. This is where I go. This is what I like to eat. Or if you're someone that wants to demonstrate you're better than I am, you go to this place. I know the owner. Tell them Dave sent you, right? So restaurants are great. Directions. At least we live in California. Everyone thinks they have a better way to drive someplace. Like they have some sort of like decoder ring or something. So directions are really helpful. I once asked, when I was married, I asked this woman for suggestions for a gift for my wife because I was really bad at picking out gifts. And she sent me the Tiffany catalog and highlighted items. Unfortunately, I didn't close the sale then. So she didn't give me any money to purchase those items. But nevertheless, people become real when they're helping you. And they demonstrate a little bit about who they are as a person. Is that helpful at all? No pun intended.
No, it is. I think what's important, though, what I'm hearing you say is you need to be sincere. Right? So don't make up, oh, I'm going to be in your neighborhood next week. Could I have a recommendation for dinner? Because at some point you may get burnt on that, which is going to then have the opposite effect. So try and find real things to ask people's help for.
It's funny they mentioned that because I was in a first meeting with a gentleman. He had a baseball on his desk. I said, you didn't play baseball, did you? Yeah, I played in college. I said, really? My son's an aspiring pitcher. What's your go-to pitch? And he showed me with the baseball his go-to pitch. And then I was hired to work for his company. And it was a two-day training to start. And I talked about the importance for asking for help. And at break, he came up and said, do you even have a son? And I go, well, of course I do. Why? He said, bring him tomorrow. So here's my son and that gentleman playing catch in the parking lot before our training. So yes, it has to be genuine because at some point I may ask about that restaurant. You said, well, I've never been to your town. That credibility goes completely out the window.
Yeah. Or what would have happened if you showed up with your son, but you know he was not the athletic type and right? Clearly.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right. So we're asking for help so we can help ourselves establish a relationship.
Yes. Can I give you an example of a multi-million dollar deal that happened from asking for help?
Sure. Help us out. Help us understand this.
Sure. So I have a client who is told by the CEO, you will get 15 minutes with your sales guy and my CFO, but my CFO does not like you. Does not like your industry. And I told him you need to give them 15 minutes and that's it. And you get 15 minutes, good luck to you. And so the salesperson called me up and said, what do I do? And I said, well, it's kind of like a sympathy date. Like the only reason why that person's with you is they have to be, but there's no interest. He said, should I sell them in 15? I said, no, you can't sell the CFO. You have to sell the CFO on some sort of trust. So let's figure out a way to ask for help. And lo and behold, there it was. We looked on his LinkedIn and he went to the Naval Academy. And I said, there's your ask. You say, I have a friend whose son is looking at options, including the Naval Academy. Can you give me a perspective of your experience? And so they talked for, it was supposed to be a 15-minute meeting. They talked for, let's say, 35 to 45 minutes. And then at one point, the sales guy said, I am so sorry. I've taken all your time. And the CFO said, wait a minute. Before you go, let me just say one more thing. Tell your friend's son to apply for the Naval Academy. It's the best thing I've ever done in my life. And wait, before you go, when you walked in, I didn't want anything to do with you. But now I'm very interested. Something has changed. I'm very interested in what you have to say. So what do you have? A multi-million dollar deal was closed simply asking for help. help. I tell my clients it's the single best thing you can do on any sales meeting. And as soon as you can get that going, it changes the entire conversation.
So your client presumably did have a friend whose son was looking to go into the academy in that case?
That would be CJ. My son.
Oh. I didn't know CJ was interested in the military academy.
He was as an option. And Tinsley was too. And Tinsley actually had a meeting with Sal Convento, who was who ran the U.S. Karate Academy. That was an exec.
I know Sal. Well, yeah. I met Sal.
Yeah. And she was looking at it, and then she was like, after further review, she's like, yeah, no. And then CJ was just looking at different options for schooling, and that was one of them. He didn't really, once he did some digging, it just didn't jive with who he was.
Right.
But that's a true story. Is there any role for the help piece in leadership?
Well, absolutely. Not as much. Well, let me rephrase that. I've never really considered it from a rapport perspective and creating that relationship, although it certainly will have that same effect. If you ask for help, how do you use help? Like, we should have the Beatles playing in the background, right? Mm-hmm. But asking for help does so much for you in terms of developing your team, developing a sense of camaraderie. So it creates that connection. Clearly it does that. I never really considered that before. In addition, when you're asking for help, you're also getting buy-in. And this is really critical. Right. As leaders, we want to make sure that our team fully buys into whatever new initiative we're trying to undertake. If they don't, they're going to do it half-ass, and it's going to fail from lack of effort. And you never want something to fail from lack of effort. If it fails, and stuff is going to fail, we're okay with that. But if it's going to fail, you want it to fail because it's a bad idea, not a bad implementation or wasn't implemented well. When you ask people for help, they take ownership. And when they take ownership, they're going to have a desire to see it succeed, which means they will do everything they can. And that's powerful. In addition, it means you don't have to do the work. And so it's a way of delegating it. Can I get your help? People say yes. And they feel respected. And I think this goes to your point, right? When you ask people for help who you respect. So when I ask a team member to help me with a problem, they will feel respected. And of course, they will reciprocate that respect back to you. And when you're working from a place where you are respected, you're much more effective as a leader. So that's kind of a long-winded way of saying, yeah, it's really beneficial.
And as you were talking, I was thinking people support what they help create.
Right. And that's what I talk about, buy-in. That's exactly it. If they assist in creating it, then they have ownership in it and they're going to want to see it succeed. You know, it's one of the reasons, frankly, we have so much issues with government initiatives and programs is that people want to see them succeed. So even when they're failing, nobody says, oh, it's failing, let's stop it. They say, oh, it's not succeeding yet, let's throw more money at it. And so that it's a double-edged sword. In business, we have the counterbalancing effect of profitability. So we can't just keep throwing money at things. So if things aren't succeeding, we tend to cut them off. But if we get that ownership, we're going to have the highest chance of having it succeed because people feel that this is theirs and they don't want to see it fail. Nobody likes failure.
That makes complete sense. So what's one tip that you can suggest for leaders to incorporate the concept of help or ayuda, if we want to use it in Spanish, if you need another word, or assistance?
Well, I think what's important is to understand that you don't need to come up with the problem. You don't need to come up with the solution to all of your problems or any of your problems. Now, that doesn't mean you won't, but if you're stymied by a problem, don't worry about it. Ask your team for help. this can be really, really powerful. Lay out why this is an issue, right? People have to understand how this impacts them. Why is this a problem? Which means they need to be connected to that big picture. They need to understand how their efforts impact the company or organization as a whole. Lay out the parameters for success, what success needs to look like, and then ask them to solve it. So I always tell my clients, this is a democracy where you as the leader get 51% of the vote. So mm-hmm. you don't need to cast your vote first. In fact, you should cast it last. Because since we don't know everything, when I ask my team to solve a problem, even when I think I know what the right answer is, I'm sometimes really surprised because they'll think of things I never considered and many times are better, more effective, or more efficient than anything I could have conceived of. And if that's the case, great. They take ownership. I say, come back to me with a plan. And now I get to do other work while they are sitting there solving this problem. Then they come back, they present their solution. We tweak it a little bit. And when I asked, I said, this is great. You have a thumbs up. Guess what? They eagerly implement it. And so I don't have to spend as much time getting them to do the things I need them to do. So it's a great way of delegating. And I mean, there's some specifics to delegating beyond that, but it's a great way to get people to buy in and delegate and become more effective. And it becomes a force multiplier. You get on the manager side of the leadership hat, you get to do more because other people are actually going to shoulder that load for you.
That's a huge nugget right there, what you talked about. And I want to make sure everyone heard that is if you let other people share their perspective first, then they may have a better idea. And if you share your idea first as the leader, that might stifle the creativity of others because they wouldn't want to challenge that with perhaps a better idea. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, it's absolutely. I worked once, my client, the owner of the company, was a former Army sergeant. And I would sit there with his meetings and he would tell the guys, here's what I suggest, but this is only a suggestion. But nobody hears the word, this is only a suggestion. What they hear is the boss's suggestion isn't a suggestion. That's how people hear things, you know. Mm-hmm. It's sort of like when the commanding officer said, you know, I'd like to invite you to, right? Well, if I invite you to something, you have the option of saying yes or no. I can't make it, sorry. When the skipper invites you to attend a meeting, it's not an invitation.
Right.
And so we know that. And when a boss asks you to do something, you really don't frequently have the option of saying no. So state the problem, ask for their input. Now, you may not like their response. That doesn't mean you say, no, we're not going to do that. Here's how we're going to do it. Because then what they'll hear is, oh, you didn't really want my input anyway.
Yep.
Be Socratic. Ask questions that reveal to them the weaknesses of their response. And remember, they don't have all the information you do all the time. So you may have to go, oh, here's why this is a problem, not why it won't work. Here's the problem that this will create, thinking about unintended negative consequences. How do we overcome that? You go through that process a few times. Eventually, you might get to the place where you're going like, okay, what about this? And you now, because you've already engaged in this dialogue, it truly is a suggestion. Will this work? You ask them that very specific, will this work? And let them flash it out.
Mm-hmm.
Now, again, you may come to a solution. You may not. If you don't, and you're finally like, look, I know what the answer is. You flushed it all out. You're thinking to yourself, all right, here's what I'd like to recommend. What if we go like this? And you lay out your solution and let them shoot holes at it because there may be a hole there that you need to be aware of. But if there isn't, but sometimes people still don't get it all the way. They're like, I don't know. Like, well, I think this is the way I want to go. By engaging in that dialogue with them, they will still buy into your solution more than if you just imposed it on them from day one. So even if you're thinking, I know this is the right solution, I'm just going to impose it on them because I don't have the time.
Right.
You want to avoid that unless you truly, truly don't have the time. If it's an emergency, I need to make a decision now, don't hesitate. But if you have the time, go through the process, you will get greater buy-in.
That's great insight. I just want to add, I want to jump back to the sales piece just for 48 seconds. Is that fair?
I got the clock going.
Okay, fair. So people might be reluctant to ask for help because they fear rejection. That's one of the biggest challenges that people in sales have. So one thing, if you notice when I ask, I say, I don't suppose you can offer me assistance with this. I don't suppose you can help me with that. Or you probably don't know any good restaurants around here, do you? Or something like that. Because if they say no, I still feel intact. And we're going to spend a whole session on questioning techniques and the way to do that. But I just want to put that out there, because if someone says, if I say, you know, Dave, you probably can't think of any good restaurants in your area, can you? And you go, well, of course I can. And then you'll give them, if you go, you know, I really don't eat. We only eat at home all the time. We go down the mountain when we're looking for a nice restaurant. Then I say, oh, no problem. But if I ask you and you say, no, I don't, then it becomes an awkward, what do I say next? Does that make sense?
Yeah. So if you say, if you ask it in a sort of a positive way, do you know, fill in the blank? And I say, no. Well, let's go back to what we talked about, okayness. Mm-hmm. I just let you down and I don't feel okay about myself.
Right. And I feel not okay because I don't know where to go next.
So it's a lose-lose situation if you ask the question in such a way that it's you're expecting an answer. So what you're suggesting is ask the question in a way that implies you don't expect them to have an answer.
That's right. And if they say, no, I actually don't, I say, not a problem. And now we move on and you're intact and I'm intact and we can move on to something else.
But meanwhile, we failed together, not separately.
Exactly. Or there's not a failure. It's a neutral.
It's actually a success. You don't expect me to have an answer and I didn't let you down.
Right. So I was right.
Right. As opposed to you expect me to have an answer and I let you down. Right. Or you don't expect me to have an answer and I pleasantly surprise you.
Right. And when you say that, you get excited. No, of course I do. Oh my gosh, there's great places. And then you get to be the expert. And when you're the expert, you're going to want to be around me more.
So how early in your sales conversation do you do this?
How about, hi, Dave. Hey, it's so great to meet you. Hey, you know what? I don't suppose you can help me out here as soon as I possibly can, because it changes the entire dynamic. Because in sales, I may walk into your office and you've almost got your arms folded going, oh, here comes another one. What does he have to offer? Can't wait to cut him down. Or I'm nervous because this person's going to try to manipulate me to get something. So if I walk in and I say, hey, Dave, great to meet you. And I ask maybe one question about you. And I say, hey, I don't suppose you can give me a tip or you can help me out. I do it as soon as possible. It changes the entire conversation for the rest of the meeting.
So let me ask you a question about this. Maybe you could help me out with this piece. One of the things that I typically do when I am starting any meeting, and I want to go through some bonding and rapport. And by the way, for our listeners out there, like bonding and rapport is not something you only do in the start of a sales meeting. The beginning of every meeting, you want to reconnect with your team members. Absolutely. Even if they're a prospect that you've never met before and you want to make a first-time connection, or it's a team that's been functioning really well, spend a few minutes just reinforcing those connections. Yep. Intentionally. Not just the milling about before you sit down at a conference table, assuming we're ever allowed to sit at conference tables again. Intentionally start off with something personal, you know, share something yourself, et cetera. Just make that connection. So if I'm on a phone call, I will do that as well. And frequently with new prospects in my business where I'm in the sales role, I might ask them to give me a little background about themselves. And they say, hey, tell me about yourself, or how did you come to this job? Is it beneficial even to preface that with, help me out. I'm really trying to get an understanding here. How did you end up where you are today? Does that have the same effect?
Absolutely, because it puts you kind of in that the one down position, you know, the okay and not okay, and allows that person to bring you up. But if I can ask a question, remember we talked about NLP prior, if I can ask a question rather than in a way that is inquisitive, hey, can you help me out here? It changes the entire dynamic because they're answering the same question, but they're doing it such a way because they're bringing benefit to you versus just answering a standard question they've heard 9,000 times before.
So what about the, and we haven't talked about DISC yet, and that's going to come up in a future podcast. DISC mm-hmm. is a personality behavioral assessment tool or way of classifying individuals. That Heidi, the driver, who may be a little impatient and might go, well, you could read about, why didn't you open up, now I'm blank, LinkedIn. Get on LinkedIn. Why didn't you get on LinkedIn and look me up ahead of time, right? Isn't that a possible reaction?
It is, but if you ask it in such a way going, hey, you probably can't help me out, the D, which is the driver, the dominant personality, is going to say, well, of course I can help you out. What do you mean I can't help you out? Don't tell me I can't help you out. This is what I want to tell you. It changes the entire dynamic, even with someone that's highly dominant personality, a driver type. Imagine, think of the biggest driver you can think of. I don't want to get political, but I will for 30 seconds. If someone said to President Trump, President Trump, this has worked for lots of other presidents. Don't suppose it would work for you, would it? He would spend the entire time telling how not only it would work, it would be better. That's a deep behavior.
The greatest, the best. There's nothing more. I do it better than everybody else too, but I'm the best at it. There's nobody in the history of the world who's done this better than me.
Yes.
So, at any rate, let's get off, move away from that subject. Step away from the politics.
It could be any D in your life.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And once again, folks, D stands for driver, not what you're thinking. Okay.
Right.
So although it's easy to confuse the two, somebody who has and we'll talk about DISC in an upcoming podcast because there's a ton there. And both Darren and I have spent a great deal of our adult lives looking at this and trying to understand this. Okay, shameless plug for future podcasts aside, this again goes back to what you said about couching your question as a negative, which we're also going to get more in depth in how to question properly. So, great. Is there anything else? Can you help me out here, Darren? Is there anything else we haven't covered?
Well, remember I talked about this before. People want to feel like they matter and people feel like they belong. Create opportunities where people feel like they matter and they belong. They'll move mountains for you. So when I ask for help, it makes them feel like they matter. When I ask for help, it makes them feel like they belong. Those are the two key elements that I think that's successful in any relationship, business, personal, professional, whatever it may be. And that, to me, is why asking for help is so beneficial. And I will tell you, when you try this, I don't suppose you ever will, but if you were to try it, to our listeners, I would love to hear your responses of how entire conversations change, including when I asked someone for help, I ended up getting a plane that was an international flight on the runway to come back and pick up passengers and lots of other opportunities that we'll cover at another time.
Wow. That sounds like a story. All right. So if listeners, I don't suppose you feel like helping us out in the comments section, why don't you put some results. Let us know how asking for help worked out for you. That'd be very beneficial to future listeners, and you'd be really helping everybody else. So with that, I think that's a wrap for today's show, Darren.
Thanks, Dave. Looking forward to the next one.
Likewise.
That concludes another episode of Disarming Persuasion. My name's Dave Rosenberg.
And this is Darren Cecil.
Visit our websites at LockedOnLeadership.com or DarrenCecil.com. Follow us on social media. You can find the links in the show notes. Remember, if they fail to make a decision, you failed to disarm them.